and welcome to Chapter Select, the book club for video games. As always with you, I am Jens, and with me, my good friend, Randy.
Hey, how's it going today?
It's going very well. How about you?
It is just before craziness happens for us, or at least for me, with E3 coming up this weekend.
Well, I'm already kind of in the middle of the craziness.
Yes. Summer Game Fest came out right before we recorded this, and then we're doing all these live streams on W2M, and let's see, Final Fantasy VII Intergrade just came out today, and Ratchet & Clank comes out tomorrow, and...
Oh my god.
I don't
Ratchet
see any
Clank comes out tomorrow?
Yeah, Ratchet & Clank comes out on Friday.
Oh god, when am I going to play Final Fantasy Intergrade? Jiminy.
It's... Well... A lot's going on.
I was just happy, just for full disclosure, you know, we just recorded our review of Postal, and I had actually just finished my notes on Postal before we recorded that, and that's when the Elden Ring trailer dropped. And
yes.
Oh my god, what a way to wash that Postal out of our minds is that Elden Ring trailer. Man, it looks beautiful. And now people can finally shut up about they want Dark Souls in their Zelda, because we got Zelda and now Dark Souls.
I'm happy for you. I'm happy that that
my
has
goodness.
Finally been revealed a little bit with a date.
January cannot come soon enough.
Right. All right, but let's get into this one. Let's bring up your childhood, sir.
Yes, my childhood. Really, the beginning of, I mean, obviously my childhood began in 82, but really, my childhood began in 1990 with Loom. LucasArts's...
We had two completely different childhoods, by the way.
Yes. The classic graphical adventure game, designed on Scum, of course, like all LucasArts games were at the time. I played the DOS version. It also came out on Amiga and TurboGrafx. Led by the great Brian Moriarty, one of the who was an Infocom writer that did a whole bunch of great Infocom game, did a Zork, and then LucasArts snatched him up. Let's make games for us. And this is very much in the vein. Loom is interesting because it's not like other LucasArts games. It is, it doesn't really have the comedic elements as much as most LucasArts games do. It's an original property that is kind of moody and beautiful and just world-building fantasy setting. And it was a big departure for them, also in terms of gameplay, in that their philosophy behind this was no failure. You know, we want a game that people can finish. We're not going to throw crazy puzzles at you. Anything that you need to do is going to be within like 3 or 4 screens of where you currently are. You know, they wanted to make a finishable adventure game. And that's why I thought it would be a really good way of kind of just having Randy dip his toe into the genre.
Yeah, I did.
Doesn't sound like you enjoyed it, though.
No, I did not. I anybody that likes this kind of stuff, that all power to you. Maybe we should have picked a game that had anything entertaining in it.
Wow.
Maybe some comedy or anything, or some puzzles that were hard to figure out. There was only one time that I got stuck on a puzzle and had to look it up. And I'd have to go back. It was something really stupid that I just didn't realize. I'd have to go back and look, and I'll message you afterwards. But it was like 2/3 of the way through the game. But other than that, like you said, it was pretty easy to do as long as, and you had told me this before, as long as you kept notes of
yes.
what each one is. My question is, because when I did look that up, it was just telling me which one to use, which I didn't realize they had names to these spells. So then I had to try to figure out, because I was using different stuff, different code names for mine, because the game never tells you exactly what the spell is called. But they didn't put the combination on it. Is the combination randomized?
It's not it's not completely randomized, but basically there are 3 or 4 possible, actually not 4, but there are up to 3 possible combinations of spells for each. So it's like randomized between 3 options.
Gotcha. That's kind of cool that you'd have, it's not just, okay,
yeah,
I've played it once, now I know everything and I go from
yeah,
there.
It's so that you can't just cheat your way through it. You have to actually, you know, write down the spells and all that. I went by the, Loom used to come with a thing called the Book of Spells, which had descriptions of all the spells with little note sheets to write them in. That was a part of the game. So, you know, I'm using those names for the spells. And I'm assuming that's what most people are using, you know, Golden to straw, untwisting, appearing, sharpening, dulling, terror, sleep, awaken, night vision, emptying, all those. Yeah, so there is basically a spot to write those combinations to. What this is basically is it's an adventure game where all the puzzles are based on casting spells. And the way that you cast spells is via music. So when you investigate an object, you click on it, they might make a four-note little melody, little sound. And that is going to correspond to the notes on your distaff, which you've got like a magic staff. You're a wizard, part of this guild of weavers, which we'll get into. But you've got a staff with you, and the staff has a little bit of a note chart going from low C to high C. And so it's eight notes. And basically, any spell can be made with those eight notes. And it's going to be different based on randomization. It's also going to be different based on difficulty, I think, difficulty setting. One thing I did this time, and I actually, two things actually. I played through this game twice, both the EGA and the VGA version, and we'll get to that. But also, and I never did this as a kid because I couldn't have possibly done it, I played it on expert mode. And what expert mode does is it takes the notes away from your staff. And it doesn't light your staff up with the notes when you hear them.
Oh,
so you have to actually figure the spells out by ear, and you have to remember which part of your staff does which note, playing it as an instrument. So that adds quite a bit of difficulty. Yeah, I mean, 8-year-old Jens would not have been able, like I could never get anywhere in expert mode in this game. So
yeah,
this is my first time actually playing it, you know, the really hard way.
37-year-old Randy wouldn't be able to get anywhere either. So I was
No. It's only eight notes. So like once you learn them, it becomes possible to, you know, identify what the spells are. But I definitely had to click stuff, you know, like learning the sharpened spell or whatever. I had to keep clicking that scythe, like trying to listen. Okay, wait, was that an E? You know, so yeah, that's really, if you want to play, the real Loom Begins Here, you know, expert mode will actually require you to have pitch and to identify notes. But if you're not doing that, it just becomes a matter of, okay, you've got a list of spells that you're writing down as you're going through the game, and you apply them to things. Oh, this thing needs to be opened. I'm going to apply the open spell. Oh, if I reverse the order of the notes, it is a closed spell. You know, filling becomes emptying, dulling becomes sharpening, or vice versa. At one point, there's like a killing spell, which you can also use as a healing spell. So, you know, you have about, I would say there's about 25 spells or so over the course of the game that you learn, and then you just use them on stuff to progress. And it's not long. It took me, but my first playthrough of these two took me about 3 hours, I think, because I was remembering some stuff. But like playing it the second time in VGA, man, it was like under 2 hours.
Yeah, it's not long.
It's not a long game.
Which was good for me.
But, you know, it's an adventure game. You click around environments. You learn these spells. You solve very light puzzles. And you have dialogue with the characters that you encounter, of which there aren't that many. There's maybe, like, what, a dozen characters in this game?
Yeah, if that.
Yeah. Well, main characters less than that. But, I mean, there are still, like, okay, the three shepherds and, like, you know, characters who are not even named. But, like, as far as named characters, let's see. We've got, you know, Hetchel, who is your godmother who raised you. You yourself, Bobbin Threadbare, the protagonist. And then there are, like, the various guild leaders that you meet as you visit the guilds. Actually, Randy, we're going to say you're going to have a question for me about the world. Maybe so this would be a good lead into.
Yeah, it's more at the beginning because I remember because I played this in two sittings, and so when you first start the game and you get to the elder's house or whatever that was where the big loom is, you walk in on these elders talking, and is my memory just really shitty? Aren't they trying to find you? Like you're in trouble?
Yes.
That never turns into anything. Because
yes,
when you do find them, they are happy to see you, right?
They kind of, they're not really happy to see you. They're just, they just don't want to make a, you know, they want to get rid of you as soon as possible. And you're not supposed to be there. And the whole thing with you is your mother supposedly pulled you out of the loom. So it doesn't go into, like, okay, our Weavers... All right, let's talk about the world. So, fantasy world centered around these different guilds, where these societies have formed around you know, what they are producing. So you've got the shepherds, and there's way more of them that you don't even encounter in the game that are in the bigger lore. If you had the, you know, the manual and all the stuff that used to come with the game, there's an audiobook that goes along with the game, which I think is actually fantastic. But yeah, so there's greater world building that doesn't even play into this story, but essentially it's a world of guilds, and the guilds that you deal with in this are the Blacksmith Guild, the Glassmakers Guild, the Shepherds Guild, the Clerics Guild, and the Weavers. And the Weavers are the most mysterious, where they may not even be completely human. It doesn't seem like they are born in the same way that humans are. Like, again, you were basically pulled from the loom,
mm-hmm.
Which almost makes it seem like you were birthed from the other realm that you kind of open. Except that's the afterlife at the end when they... So there are other realms outside of just the physical realm in which you find yourself that are all woven into the loom. And that was an unauthorized... birth, or that's a thing that your mother did that she shouldn't have, and as a result she was banished, and you basically did not get trained as a weaver. So at the beginning of the game you are a bad weaver just because you did not have the learning that everybody else in the society did. But that is also and you are left behind in the inciting incident at the beginning, which is there's a double cross. You kind of walk in on this meeting between the elders who are discussing the prophecy, and the prophecy involves you as this kind of unwanted thing that shouldn't have happened, that got pulled out of the loom and is going to bring about the downfall of the Weavers. So they're discussing, you know, how they're going to get rid of you, what to do. They're down on Hetchel for trying to protect you. And at that point, when they punish Hetchel and they cast a change spell on her to change her into a duck, the spell kind of backfires and all the elders are turned into swans. And at this point, and the swans then leave the island, essentially in disgrace, and you're the only one left behind. And you're kind of, it's up to you now to figure out, okay, what is this prophecy? You know, why am I being shunned? Where did the rest of the Weavers go, and all that? And that is where your adventures start. And you get their staff, and you learn your first spell, which is open. Actually, I should say, Hetchel does not get turned into a duck right away, right? She gets turned into an egg,
mm-hmm.
and then you cast the open spell on the egg, and then she's kind of birthed out of it. And you have that conversation where she explains all this to you, that the elders have always been afraid of you. The loom turned them, or something turned them into swans to protect you, basically. So they, instead of cursing you, they cursed themselves, kind of thing.
So that's where I had gotten confused, because the next time you see those swans, because you're hunting these swans the whole time, or you're trying to find them. And then when you do find them, they're led by your mom. And I'm like, I was being hunted by, or they were trying to find me, and then it was, that's where I had gotten lost.
I don't think they're led by her. I think your mom was the first person turned into a swan. So I think your mom was in the other realm by herself for a very long time. And then eventually all the excised, eventually all the other swans kind of joined her. And I don't think she's their leader or anything.
So she's not part of that first group.
They're just hanging out together, because what else are they going to do? They're all swans, right?
Sure.
You don't even talk to anybody else. You just talk to her, and she tells you that she's your real mother. And she was, basically cursed and cast out, and that Hetchel raised you and listened to Hetchel and all this. Anyway, but that's your inciting incident where you're trying to figure out what's going on here. And you venture out into the world and you start learning spells. And once you leave and also the Weavers have always isolated themselves. So Loom is the name of the island as well. And they've not really left this island in like a century. So you're the first weaver to leave the island and go back into the greater world. And that's where for the first guild that you encounter is the Glassmakers Guild.
Yes.
And you meet Master Goodmold, who is a glassblower there, who is a cool, cool character. I like him, and I forget who his who the guild. He's not the leader of the of Crystal Guard, is he? He may be.
I forget.
I think the leader is the guy. He's not really named, but we see him talking to the dude who turns out to be the big bad, Bishop Mandible. Mm-hmm. Or, well, Bishop Mandible is not the big bad, but, you know, he's the one who sets all this stuff in motion, really.
Or he's trying to get the crystal ball that looks 8 hours into the future or whatever.
He's behind everything. He wants to fray. So the Weavers keep reality. They keep the fabric of reality in check and in repair. And make sure that there's no bleed through. And Bishop Mandible's whole thing is that he wants to become supreme ruler. And to do this, he's going to raise an army of the dead. And in order to do this, he's going to tear a fabric in reality to, you know, to the afterlife, basically, so that he can get the dead to fight for him, to come back from the afterlife. That is his whole thing. And that is, I think, also where the curse, I think he is, even though it's not explicitly said, I think he is responsible for taking, I think he needed to get rid of the Weavers first. But his other plan is he's having the glassmakers make crystals for him, which can see into the future. They're kind of like the Palantirs in Lord of the Rings. He's having the blacksmiths make weapons for his army. He's having the shepherds make food, which... I don't know. The army is an undead army. I don't know why the undead army needs sheep, but I guess he needs the sheep for something. And yeah, did I forget one? But yeah, you just kind of go from guild to guild and you learn, oh yeah, Bishop Mandible has placed a huge order with us for swords. And are we going to have all these swords done in time, you know? So as you're going from guild to guild and meet everybody, you meet Fleece, who's the head of the shepherds. Who also needs to fill a big order from the clerics, which is in danger because there's a dragon that loves to eat sheep. So you got to deal with the dragon. And yeah, so it's a big take over the world plot. But that then backfires on him when you finally come to the clerics guild and he does summon the dead. We meet the leader of the dead who's named Chaos. And Chaos basically tears him to shreds immediately in an awesome, like, don't you love that animation when a Bishop Mandible's head gets blasted off his body and flies towards the camera? It's amazing. For its time, I mean.
It's okay.
That's the thing. I guess, like, if you were playing PC games in the 90s, and this was my first one, so I didn't really have a frame of reference, but what they do with 16-color EGA for the time is astounding. I think it's one of the most beautiful, if not, I mean, maybe not the most beautiful game of 1990 because it's competing with consoles and also VGA was already a thing. But like as far as EGA games go, I think it is the most beautiful EGA game. Like the way they do shading and stuff by just stacking pixels and doing all the they do all sorts of neat things with just 16 colors, which is why that is. Honestly, still my preferred version. And then playing the... In fact, I should talk about this. You know, we both bought this game on Steam.
Yes.
For $6. Mm-hmm. And we told our listeners to play it that way. That was a big mistake. I don't like the VGA version of this game. There is... The one thing that's really good about it is the voice acting, despite being implemented poorly and kind of cutting off sometimes or not triggering right. Or going too fast. Outside of implementation, I think the voice acting for that version is spectacularly good. But in order to accomplish that, they made really big sacrifices. Like, not only is the game censored in places, like, later on we find Master Goodmold dead. Like, after the fabric of reality is torn apart and the Arm of the Dead kind of enters our world, we go from place to place and we see the carnage that has been unleashed on the world and we... Mm-hmm. Heal what we can and whom we can, and we fix what we can. But Master Goodmold is beyond saving at this point. And in the old EGA version, there is like a big pool of blood under Master Goodmold's head, which is the only thing that remains once he disappears. Apparently, the Weavers, when they die, just kind of fade away like a Jedi or something. So yeah, he just kind of disappears, leaving behind a pool of blood. That pool of blood is not there in the VGA version. And in fact, a lot of things are kind of slightly censored. In the VGA version, But then also the VGA version cuts about a third of the dialogue because it can't fit all the voice acting on the CD because it was CD audio. So they could only have like 78 minutes of voice acting in this game. So to me, it is literally, you know, the very definition of what a compromised version is, mm-hmm. in that they made big compromises. And also, I just think the art style. Oh, and it doesn't have the character portraits, which is another thing. You get these great character close-ups for some of the most dramatic dialogue scenes, and those are all gone. So I apologize to the listeners if you played the VGA version. You have played an inferior version of Doom. I mean, Loom.
Well, Loom is definitely an inferior version of Doom. I agree.
That is arguable.
It's not arguable.
But the good news is that if you do still want, if you want to experience, you know, the Loom that I fell in love with, that I think is the definitive Loom, there are abandonware sites. Like, you can just find it. And there is an app called ScumVM, which is basically a perfect emulator for any Scum game. So, you know, whether it's Monkey Island, whether it's Sam & Max, the CD Indiana Jones, the CD-ROM versions, the non-CD-ROM versions, they all work perfectly on Scum. Even on Mac, I played this game on my Mac, and it was perfect. And it even supports some non-LucasArts stuff like Beneath a Steel Sky. You can play Beneath a Steel Sky with ScumVM. So that's my recommendation. And Randy, what do you think of the ScumVM experience as far as like loading and booting a game? Wasn't it super easy?
Oh, yeah. It loads up really, really fast and you're able to change stuff. I had problems saving at first because I'm not a PC gamer, especially that old school stuff. So I didn't know all the F5s and stuff. And I had to ask you about that. But once you kind of get used to it, yeah, it goes extremely fast. You can save at any point, and it worked really well.
It's one of the best emulators for old games, which is, you know, specifically Scum games are like the games that I care most about from this era. So it's a total godsend. And you can play EGA Loom that way. But, you know, VGA Loom, it still has its moments. It's still a good game. I think the thing about this in general is that in my memories, Loom is a lot more epic than I think. Like, it is like in my, everything has kind of grown in recollection. And it was shocking a little bit just how short it was and just how like simple and straightforward the plot ended up being, where it's just, oh, you learn that there's this guy trying to take over the world, and he almost does it, and he summons a great evil, and then you go and fix it, and you repair the fabric of reality, but you and your brethren can never come back to reality, and are, you know, you pass over into another realm as swans and fly off into the sunset together. And that really is the story of Loom. It's very simple.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess it's funny because you were messaging me at the point where you were like in Crystal Guard, or you just met the shepherds, and you said like, oh yeah, I've made some progress. And I was like, yep, you're about halfway through. And you're like, I'm halfway through?
I've done nothing. I had done like 5 puzzles at that point. And you're like, oh yeah, you're halfway.
So tell me some of your impressions and why you didn't like it.
All right. So first off, I played the Scum version. So the original version, which is what I would rather have played anyways, just because I want to get the actual feel of what it was in 1990. And I mm-hmm. will say, I don't know if I like that version just from playing, because obviously I started on Steam. I'd played that first little bit just to kind of get a feel of it. And then you're like, no, you got to try this version instead. Yes, the audio gets cut out and stuff on the version that's on Steam. But on the Scum version, there are so many times where there's just nothing. Like,
what do you mean?
There's no music. There's no audio. There was like nothing. There was many times where I'm like going around and I get no audio for minutes.
Sure. But I mean, there's way more music actually in the old EGA Scum version than in the VGA.
So there's even less music?
Yeah, because...
Wow.
Yeah, because the VGA version uses CD audio. So the music sounds better, but it only appears in like 2 or 3 places. And a lot of it is just completely silent.
So I just felt like...
Like this actually has, I feel like this has more audio other than the voice acting.
That's just not good. I felt like it was empty as mm-hmm. far as like the music just wasn't there. When it was there, it was good. I'm not going to say it was bad music by any means. It fit the situation, but there just wasn't a lot there.
It's Tchaikovsky. And that's the other thing about this game is this game introduced me to Tchaikovsky in a way that made me fall in love with his music for basically the rest of my life.
as you said, this game is extremely short, and you were going through all of these lore, which a lot of it comes into this other stuff that you like the instruction manual and the audio thing that you'd sent me. But as far as the game goes, it's like you only interact with these people for a minute or two. The evil dude you meet for a bit, and he has a very interesting character, and mm-hmm. those were for some interesting dialogue to read. But my favorite character turned out to just not go into anything, and he's the guy that you meet right before you meet the evil guy, and you have to switch with him, switch your looks.
Rusty Nailbender.
I loved that scene where you mm-hmm. switch with him, and then the dragon that's been hunting you down ends up killing him, and then he comes back from the dead. He's like, I'm going to get him. And I'm like, oh, this could turn out to be really something interesting. And then when you see him in the dead, he's just like, well, I didn't like that very much. And you're like, well, I apologize. And he's like, all right. Oh, so man.
The thing with him, and this is kind of the craziest, so you've got a healing spell, and it mm-hmm. seems that while the fabric between life and death is open and his soul is near his body, you are able to heal him and bring him back.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that does resolve things.
Yeah, I know, but I just want, like, I really liked that scene. I was like, oh, that was clever.
Mm-hmm.
That me switching with this person has affected him in a very real manner. I was like, all right, that was kind of clever. And I was thinking things are going to start picking up. And then you just undo it, and then nothing ever happened. I was like, oh.
That's true. My favorite thing about him, and again, you would not even get this in the VGA version of the game, is I love when he's getting super mad at you that you're responsible for him being eaten by a dragon. Mm-hmm. He pulls this face where he just like grimaces at you really scarily. It's awesome.
Yeah. That part missed the mark for where I wanted. So like I said, it just felt empty. It was going to be a great first step, which in one sense is okay, because again, the puzzles weren't very hard. I remembered the one that I got stuck on, and again, it was mm-hmm. really, really, really stupid. And it was when the guy is hammering on the sword, and every time I tried to cast something on him, it was like, oh, it's too loud. So I didn't realize I had to go over and listen to the other conversation first, which then allowed me to do something.
Well, it's not just that. It's you have to wait for him to raise the sword.
Yeah.
You can't do it while he's hammering.
Mm-hmm.
There is like a point where he raises the sword in the air and it kind of glint, and he like checks out how it's glinting. He's checking out the sharpness. That's when you just got to cast a spell at the right time. Yeah.
So, I mean, that was the only one that I really got stuck on. There was a couple of times where like my brain just didn't want to work, like with you, when you're with the dragon and then you're like, oh, you have to turn the gold into straw and then light it on fire. Mm-hmm. And that took me a little bit. I was walking around that cave for about 10 minutes going, okay, what am I doing? Thinking I was just having, okay, it's like, all right, see ya. And then you couldn't go anywhere. So that took a little bit. But like you said, I mean, the puzzles aren't that hard, which is good for somebody getting into the intro. It was just, there wasn't much to the story to really get hooked in. I think the one thing with LucasArts games from the ones that I have played before, it's that kind of comedy
mm-hmm.
that keeps you into it and you're trying to see
this
what
is much
kind
more
of,
serious.
And it is more of a, if you do something wrong, it's going to give you a funny line. With Loom, the only times I could get it to do anything out of the ordinary is trying to do open on every grave I saw.
Mm-hmm.
And then everything would shake and he would go, oh, I shouldn't do that. Like, well, at least give me some kind of an Easter egg for going out of my way to try to do something silly. And there just didn't seem to be that much in it. And I think that's what would appeal to me with adventure games is that, okay, we have spent so much time thinking out of the box of what people are going to click on and interact with that we have left all of these Easter eggs to find, which then leads the player to go, oh, I have to click on everything and I have to go through all of this and just see all the hidden stuff. And with Loom, it was about halfway through the game, I went, well, obviously there is nothing hidden in here. So it is, here's the guy I have to go talk to. So let's just move on and do that.
Mm-hmm. Sure. And let's not talk around it. It was criticized at the time for that. Like this, when this game came out, the big criticisms of it were it's too short, it's too slight,
mm-hmm.
doesn't have strong puzzles, it doesn't have a lot of depth or whatever. I just really love the world and the mood and the visuals and the music and everything about it. And yeah, going back to it, like, okay, there's not nearly as much substance here as I remembered there being. Again, you know, it was super impressive to 8-year-old Jens. And then, you know, 38-year-old Jens says, like, okay, you know, it's still pretty good. That was a fun time. That was pretty to look at and all that. So I can totally see where you're coming from.
Yeah. Again, I don't hate it by any means. It's not anything I'm going to remember at all or take anything away from. This is definitely not the game that is going to get anybody into this kind of a genre. Because
There are Easter eggs, though. Like, there are things. Like, I turned any bit of straw I found, I would turn to gold. And there's some stuff that happens as a result.
Oh, interesting.
In the Blacksmith's Guild, you can refill the firewood. You know, the guy, the boss, when you are disguised, so you take on, there's a spell for taking on someone else's look,
yeah.
Essentially. A reflection is what that spell is generally called. And yeah, you disguise yourself as Rusty Nailbiter, which is why the dragon then eats him, because he thinks he's you. So you basically swap appearances. And you can go into the Blacksmith Guild in his place, and then Mr. Stoke, who is his boss, immediately is like, you bring me one lousy stick mm-hmm. of wood, you know, your staff, mm-hmm. when you're supposed to be gathering firewood for 4 hours. Like, he locks you away for a little bit until Hetchel comes and frees you. But yeah, you can use the fill spell and make wood for him. So there is some stuff, but I agree with you. It's not nearly on the level of other LucasArts games, but man, you look at the credits on this thing. I remember you beat this game before me, at least the original version, as far as timing was concerned, just mm-hmm. because I was doing other stuff. And you posted, you just like sent me a shot of the end credits rolling. And it was the credit where it's talking about animation by Steve Purcell. I was like, holy shit, Steve Purcell animated this game, you know, creator of Sam & Max. So it's just, and it's full of that. You look at those credits and it's just like, oh man, everybody who's like somebody in LucasArts Adventure Games touched us in some way and did their little contribution. So just as a historical artifact, it's super interesting.
Yeah. Again, it was no offense taken from the game, I guess. It was just, mm-hmm. it's just there. I know, and it's one of those where, it's like, obviously, when you played it when you were very young, you have nostalgia for it, and I can't blame you for it. There are games mm-hmm. that I played on the NES that I have great nostalgia for that I know are way worse than this.
But, I mean, you can see this as a Jens origin story, right?
Yeah. Oh, 100%. 100%.
I mean, it's so... I'm still just playing them like, man, this is... so me in every way, shape, or form. It's just I wish there was more of it. And that's the thing, is that Loom was meant to be like the first in the series. And I don't think it ever did well again to make Loom 2.
Yeah, it's not.
Or well enough, I mean. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, it just shows you that Loom is Jens' first game. One of my very first games of all time, as far as the NES goes, is uh-huh. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. So that shows you my...
Yeah, exactly.
Games that I
got. Well, it's funny. Ooh. There was a tweet thread we were both in just the other day where they were talking about like what are four defining games mm-hmm. for you.
But I put the good Turtles game on there. I put the arcade game on there. I'm talking the original that is awful.
Well, I didn't put Loom on my list either. I think I put Secret of Monkey Island because I think Secret of Monkey Island is more formative, even though it's not the first. I just think that game is an even bigger influence on me. But yeah, all my games were like, you know, there was Wing Commander and Secret of Monkey Island, all these kind of things. And then you're just like, Turtles, Mario.
Yeah.
So yeah, very, very different angles that are coming at this
from. Yeah, and that's fine. All right. Let's see where your nostalgia rates this game, sir.
Well, you know, it is regarded as one of the greatest games of all time.
Stop it.
It's one of the best adventure games of the 90s. This is not me. This is just generally, if you look at what is written about this era of games, Loom is a major one. I think I will rate it as like a for its time, like competing with other adventure games of its era. I think it is an 8.
Like that's what you're rating it is an 8.
The thing that like nostalgically it'd be a 10, but I cannot possibly give a 10.
I would quit the show if you gave Loom a 10.
Yeah, you got to deduct points for, you know, oh, okay, it actually, even at the time, it wasn't, you know, it was still flawed. And it just doesn't have the length. Like, it just doesn't have the, if you just doubled the number of puzzles or have a few more locations, build out the story a little bit. Some of the stuff that's in the audiobook could go in. So like as far as scale, it is a much smaller game than I remembered. So that's where I would say, okay, the people who criticized it at the time have a point. And it's not a 10, it's probably like a 7 or an 8. So I don't know, especially in a modern context, it's very difficult to judge it against modern games.
I get it.
And even, I'm just going to...
So my score, obviously I don't have the nostalgia that gets built into it. And I will do the same where I'm looking at it from it being a 1990 game. But there were some fantastic games that came out in 1990. Sure. I found this to be too bland. I don't understand this being called one of the greatest games or even one of the greatest adventure games. I'm not even big into adventure games. And I think if I got into that series, I would find this as one of the lower tier ones just because it is so generic and basic. So again,
it's so pretty.
Is it? It's not.
Yes. It's it's still beautiful to look at today.
Yeah. I mean, everyone says PC gaming is better than console gaming. Maybe it just wasn't in 1990.
Okay.
Because for the games I was playing in 1990, that don't look like anything.
PC became way better than console gaming when 3D graphics cards happened.
Yeah,
that's probably true. GL and Voodoo cards happened. That's when suddenly, oh, wait, Nintendo 64 looks like complete shit compared to the PC version of Shadows of the Empire, you know?
So I always bring up the IGN game scale, and this is where I built it off of. And that is why Loom for me is going to get a 5.5, which is in between mediocre and okay.
Wow.
Which
I
do feel bad giving it that score because every time I put a score for a game I don't like, I always have to like put it around Cyberpunk, which I overscored to be nice to everybody. And I hate that I am scoring this lower than Cyberpunk, but it was okay. Like I wasn't offended by anything. I didn't think it was a bad game by any means. But there wasn't a lot I saw good either. It was a game that was there for 2 hours, and it wasn't that big of a deal.
Sure. Well, that's Loom.
Yes, and I will have to come up with a game of my past that actually has a story. There's not many back then, unless you go defeat bad guy and go through levels. Is there a story to Mega Man? Dr. Wily creates eight dastardly robots. You defeat them, and he begs for his life, and
they make cartoons of it. Yeah. I've never played a Mega Man game, Randy.
Well, I won't start with Mega Man 1 because that wasn't a very good one. Okay. But I'll think about something. We'll get there. But for now, in 2 weeks, it is my pick. And again, we have gone to the nomination realm where we give nominations for the other one to pick just so we're not going way over the top. So I'm picking Dark Cloud and Jens absolutely hates it.
Right.
Or he picks Odin Sphere, and I cuss at him for 4 months. So we're trying to find a good balance, and that's why, I mean, he nominated Loom, and I was like, all right, you know, I want to see how an older game
was.
It was two hours
of your time.
And that was the other reason. It was like, it's not a lot of time, and I knew we were doing this right before E3, so like I had no... Again, I'm not upset about this game or offended that Jens picked it, because technically I picked it from his list. So from my list, Jens has selected Gone Home, which is a walking simulator. I really am curious about our discussion about this story. It's been many, many years since I've played this game, and the way that you interact with the story I thought was very, very clever. So it'll be very interesting to me.
I know nothing except that at some point there was a weird internet in-joke that they were ghosts in Gone Home.
Yep.
And I know that is not true.
You will see. We'll talk about it. But that will be in 2 weeks. Next week... well, that might be in 2 weeks, because next week may be the end of our podcast, because Jens is making us watch the movie Postal, and it might make us explode. We will see. But if we survive Postal in 2 weeks, we will be talking Gone Home. So I hope you guys have enjoyed this episode and enjoyed the other ones that we have done. It's crazy. We have now done 40 of these episodes already.
Yeah, well, we crank them.
Yeah, absolutely. But if you want to get a hold of Jens, that is at Aperture Silence on Twitter. You can reach me at Randy Isbell or reach the show at chapter_select. But until then, that's Jens. I'm Randy, and we will see you in the next chapter.